Tonight, we have notes, Genesis 41 through 42, and this is picks up right here where we were last, well, it was 3 weeks ago that we were here, in chapter 41, where the Pharaoh that we're looking at was probably Sin-wo-sret. That's how you'd say it, Sin-wo-sret the second. Most likely that fits with where Joseph was at, and there's that information about him and Genesis 41:37. This proposal pleased Pharaoh with and all of his servants, where Joseph had said, you know, he'd had these dreams, let's go and start storing up the food. Chapter 41:38, and Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning as and wise as you, because you've interpreted this dream. We've got 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine coming. You shall be, and Pharaoh, if it is the right one, Sin-wo-sret, if it's a historical story, which I think it is, you shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. And he's meaning you're going to be giving commands. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you. In other words, and you're going to see, Joseph's going to start managing. He's going to start organizing. He's going to start storing all the grain. And Pharaoh's probably just going to get updates. In fact, it's going to get to the point they can't even give him records. We can't even tell you how much grain we've got, for those 7 years are just going to be tremendous. Page 2, and there you've got your picture of Sin-wo-sret, and also it's also spelled, if you look at Egyptian history or, you know, Egyptian sites, he's also called Sin-yu-sret the second, or Sin or Ses-o-stris the second. So Sin-wo-sret the second, Sin-yu-sret the second, or Ses-o-stris the second. Same guy, just different ways of reading the Egyptian. Chapter 41, verse 41, and Pharaoh said to Joseph, and this is where we saw last week, he's going to give him several things, where he's going to give him an intention, he's going to give him an implementation, and then finally he's going to give Joseph confirmation. Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand. And like we said before, that's the auto pen. I mean, that was what he would see, like we saw on the clay bulla, if it be on the the scroll sealed with seven seals, that would be like a ring of that sort. Or we've seen bulla of other sorts have been found with people's names on it. He gave his Sin-wo-sret ring to Joseph. And so Joseph has the official Pharaoh ring that he can seal documents and commands with that. And then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand and clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him ride in his second chariot. And they called out before him, bow the knee. Thus he set him over all the land of Egypt. So when Joseph goes by, show respect. You bow your head. You show respect to the second in charge in Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh, now he says it a second time, said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no one shall lift up hand or foot in all of Egypt. And again, this would be the third speech Pharaoh makes concerning Joseph. And now this is interesting. We read it before. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zephaneth-paneah, and he gave him in marriage Asenath, the daughter of Potipherah, priest of On. So it's an Egyptian woman. Her father is a priest in On, one of the cities of the sun. So Joseph went out over the land of Egypt. Now, there's nothing mentioned about this name again. Joseph's never referred to this again. Pharaoh's going to call him as the narrator writes this story. He's going to call Joseph, Joseph. If that's because Pharaoh just started using the name Joseph, or if the narrator just translates it into Joseph so the story stays consistent. But the best that we can do on this name is God speaks and he lives, or the God has said he will live. So within there is God speaking, and the word that God spoke is he will live. And so God has spoken that this prisoner will live, that this person that's been sold as a slave, sentenced to death on a couple occasions, or close to death on different occasions, the God has said he will live. And that's the best they can do on translating Zephanath-Paneah. Or the other option is point C under 41:45 is the man who knows things. And Asenath, basically, she belongs to the Egyptian goddess Neith. She belongs to her. So the priest named his daughter that he dedicated her to the Egyptian goddess. And then turn the page, page 3. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Now, this is going to be important as, I mean, not, it's as important as anything, but he's 30 because I'm going to use this to kind of set some dates and times. He was 17 years old when he was taken captive. So now he's been in prison, been in Potiphar's house for 13 years. So you kind of know how long he's been in Egypt. He was 17 when he left, 13 years in Egypt. Now he's released from prison. Now what's interesting about this, we're going to have 7 years of plenty. So at the end of the 7 years of plenty, he's going to be 37. And then his brothers are going to show up in chapter 42, and they're going to come when they run out of food. So they're not going to come when he's 37. They're probably going to come after, again, it doesn't say specifically, but you kind of figure out they probably had enough food for 1 year. Then they started struggling, and Jacob gets upset with his sons because they're not solving the problem. So they're into apparently the second year at least. So it's been 2 years of the second seven, and so we add two to that. Joseph is 39 years old. He's 30 years old right now. We're going to read about ages 31 through 37, and he's going to have two sons during this period right here. Two sons are born to him between 30 and 37. And then the famine's going to begin, and his brothers are going to show up. Joseph's going to be 39. And that is, you know, if you want to say, is that biblical? Are you speculating? No, not at all. Because it says he was 17. It says he was 30. It says it was 7 years. The only fluctuation I've got here is when the brothers came. If they came the first year of the famine, he's 38. If they came the third year of the famine, he's 40. And so I'm choosing between 38, 39, or 40, and you can run that up as far as you want to. But that's a very good guess right here. And his two sons are born at this time. So when it says right here, chapter 41, 46, Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, we know. And he's entering the service of Senwosret. So you put that all together, you can figure out almost what year this is. And so we've got right over here, Joseph born in 1915, sold in 1898 BC, Pharaoh's dreams in 1885, prison dreams. What else we got here? Jacob flees to Canaan. Jacob is in Egypt. These are the 7 years between 18. Okay, so this would be 1885 on my schedule right here. This at 30, 1885 BC. Now that, again, that's speculation, because if you move Joseph into a different time period, you've got a different date. This is biblical. This is me trying to correlate it with Egyptian or world history. And it fits. It's not a ridiculous guess. Someone may have a better opinion. And I guess I'm standing by this with Bible support. This, more research, that can change. So that's interesting to me. Chapter 41, verse 47. During the seven plentiful years, the earth produced abundantly. Now, we looked last time about the canal of Joseph and some areas where he turned it into an oasis, a field. And the Pharaoh sent, historically, Senwosret moves his palace down there, builds his pyramid down there. So it looks like apparently Joseph's using some water off the Nile. In fact, at this time, the Pharaoh moves and joins that community. And there's evidence of that, especially at this time. But there's no mention in this ever of being without rain or having too much rain. So it appears the whole land is got plenty of rain, plenty of good weather, and it's abundant crops for the 7 years. And then after 7 years, of course, you know, they're going to have a famine. We don't know what caused the famine. Was it lack of rain? and then Joseph just kept using the canal for water? Were they anticipating a lack of rain? It doesn't mention that. You can also have famine, as you know, from disease crops. You can have some natural disaster, if it be a flood or something takes place. Or you can have a famine because, and we in the Bible it records several times, where Assyria comes through and just strips the fields and takes the harvest. And the invading army causes famine in your land, if it be the Babylonians. So we don't know what caused this famine. You could say lack of rain after the first 7 years, and that's why Joseph began to use that canal and had that oasis built, if that's part of the story. But chapter 41, 47, during the seven plentiful years, the earth produced abundantly. And so Joseph now is busy collecting, organizing, storing up, because he's got a clock. He's got a seven-year clock ticking, and everybody's got to eat, but we also got to take care of. We can't dump the surplus. We've got to store the surplus. We've got to get it in some kind of preservation, state of preservation, and he's organizing all this. Pharaoh, we would assume, is just doing what pharaohs do. He's given Joseph this assignment, and Joseph, as we know, is going to be successful in it. So he's not being lazy, or he's not forgetting to go to work. He's not taking it. He's appointed by God, and he's already proven faithful in his father's house, in Potiphar's house, in the prison. Well, now he's in charge of the land of Egypt. He's not going to drop the ball. It's not in his character to fail and start being negligent or self-centered. And so Pharaoh's like, he's probably not doing anything, just getting reports. And that's chapter 41, verse 49, or 48. He gathered up all the food of these 7 years, which occurred in the land of Egypt, and put the food in the cities. He put in every city the food from the fields around it. So there's a little bit of the organization. He does have that oasis built with Joseph's canal, where Pharaoh's going to move down and build his palace and his pyramid. That's probably going to sustain him during the 7 years of famine. But up until this time, it's no one. He didn't create some kind of watering system. The whole land is producing. Joseph, in a sense, hasn't done anything. He just got the job and says, we got to start storing food. And they go, oh, what if we run out? Oh, we've got extra surplus this year. Joseph says, store it. The next year, we've got extra surplus, store it. You store it in your cities. So Joseph isn't doing any, in a sense, construction to make this happen. He's not doing any kind of, you know, how do we super engineer this seed? He's just, God told him, 7 years of plenty is coming. Start storing the crop. Now, during that time, I'm assuming, and history, archaeology, you can see it today, it appears Joseph made some areas where the crops would grow even if the rain stopped. He had a canal coming in that we'd still keep growing crops, but that's going to come in the next 7 years. So he starts storing up all this food, and he's storing it up around the cities. We would assume during the 7 years of famine, as those cities began to use that storage up, they would then reach to Joseph, say, what have you got going on over here at your special oasis center where you've got water and storage bins? And that's where he's probably still in the famine years. Joseph may still be raising crops in this area where Senuel's threat had moved to. But during the first 7 years, it's nothing special. Just store the grain. He's organizing a storage system. And so that's your insight into his organization and his strategy was right there. Store the food near the cities where it came from. So there's no shipping or transporting. It's just harvest, harvest, store, store. And Joseph stored up grain in great abundance like the sand of the sea until he ceased to measure it. He gave Pharaoh a report the first year, the second year, the third year. But by the fourth year, it's like, Pharaoh, we stopped counting. We're just building bins trying to store this food. So there's no way of counting. It says they stopped measuring the crop. We got so much surplus. But they know 7 years of famine is coming. Now imagine if you didn't know there were 7 years of famine coming, or imagine you were careless. You think your life is going to be like this forever, and you just burned it up, wasted it, dumped it in the sea. Were careless, now you're going to perish. So Joseph is just managing this with the knowledge that we can see on the calendar when that 7 years is over and when the famine begins. And Joseph stored up grain in great abundance like the sand of the sea until he ceased to measure it, for it could not be measured. Chapter 41, verse 50, before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph. Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On, bore them to him. So he has two sons during this 7 years of plenty. Two sons are born. The first one's name is Manasseh. Now, this is interesting. And, I'll read it to you. It says, chapter 41, verse 51, Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh. Now, this is a Hebrew name. His wife's name is Egyptian. Pharaoh gave Joseph an Egyptian name, but now when it comes time to name his children, he names them a Hebrew name. It's going to be Manasseh and Ephraim. Now, what's interesting about this, if you look down in point one under 41:51, Joseph calls his first son by a name, not Asenath. Asenath, his Egyptian wife, does not name the child. What is interesting, and I went back and double-checked it, in chapter 29, verses 31 through 35, and when you talk about naming children, you think of who had the interesting name and who had the father naming the child. It's Benjamin, because Rachel calls him Benoni, Ben of my sorrow, and then dies. And Jacob changes his name to Benjamin, son of my right hand. So that's what you remember, the father named Benjamin. But before that time, and I've got the references here, 29, 31 through 35, Leah names her first four sons, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. She names them, and she names them, and she's going to say things like, because God has shown me favor, God has loved me because I was despised. And so I'm going to write this, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. Those were Jacob's first four sons, and they all belonged to Leah. And Leah named them all. Then in chapter 30, verse 3 through 8, Bilhah is going to bear sons because Rachel can't have children. So she gives Bilhah her handmaiden to Jacob. And Jacob has two sons with her, but Bilhah doesn't name them. Jacob doesn't name them. But Rachel, who's received them from Bilhah, who bore them for Rachel, she names them Dan and Naphtali. And then Leah names the sons that Zilpah bore to Jacob because she gave her handmaiden, Zilpah, to Jacob, and he had two children with her. Leah names them Gad and Asher. So you've got Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher all being named by the mom. Interestingly here, Joseph steps in and names his son Manasseh. Again, it's a Hebrew name, and it's very shocking. If you just read it in your Bible study, your daily devotion, just blow through it, you just read it there. I did my reading. But if you stop and think about what is he saying here, he's between 30 and 37. So he got married when he was 30. Let's say 2 years later, they've got their first son, Manasseh. So let's say he's 32. So he'd been sold at 17, been in slavery or in prison for 13 years, and now we're 2 years into the marriage, and that's an estimate. So maybe about 15 years. It's 15 years away from the last time he saw his brothers, the last time he saw his father. And he called him Manasseh, and I've got that written down here. Where does he got it written down? Well, you can just read the verse. Chapter 41, 51, Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, why is it Manasseh? He says two things. God has made me forget all my hardship, and God has made me forget all my father's household. And so you can see down there, point 2A and B, there are two things that is in the name of Manasseh. And now he's not bitter. He's not mad at God. He's still a believer. He's still got faith. Now, he's using the name Elohim. He's not using Yahweh. In fact, in these two chapters, I did a quick check looking for somewhere where Jacob's going to say Yahweh or Joseph's going to say Yahweh to his brothers. No one says Yahweh. They just say Elohim. So they're talking about God, not the covenant God of the Abrahamic covenant. Now, again, it's the same sense, but there's special times where they talk about the covenant name of Yahweh. So So he's not bitter, but he does say, God has got me now in a position after some 15 years where I have won. I have forgot my hardship. I'm in a place now in Egypt with my wife in my now royal palace, in controlling the whole land, being successful, favored by Pharaoh, and I can hardly remember being thrown into a pit by my brothers. I can hardly remember the trouble I got into at Potiphar's house. And those years in prison, serving as a prisoner, taking care of the other prisoners, I forgot all the trouble. And it's like, well, that's good. But watch this next one. God has made me forget all my hardships, but it also has a second meaning. This is Joseph's words. This is in the text. This is not me translating from the Egyptian into the Hebrew and into English. What is the hidden meaning? This is what Joseph says. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh because God has made me forget all my hardships over the last 15 years and all my father's house. That's huge. All my father's house, and I've got that 2B. It appears as far as Joseph is concerned, Joseph is still walking with God. God is still blessing Joseph, and Joseph recognizes that God is blessing him. He's made him forget all of his hardships. But Joseph is, in this word, in this naming of his son, finished with his father's household. It's not like, oh, I ask that he promised that I get to see my father again, or I hope to be restored to my family. It's like, you know, just like I forgot the pit, I forgot Potiphar's house, I forgot the prison, I forgot all about Jacob. I forgot all about, what does that mean? Well, he's forgot about his brothers. Well, okay, way to move on, Joseph. I'm not holding any grudges. That's all ancient history. But I forgot about my father's household. Wait, Jacob is the heir of the Abrahamic covenant, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the 12 sons of Jacob are the heirs. Now remember, Isaac had a brother, Ishmael, but Israel was not part of the covenant. Only Isaac was. Then Isaac's got two sons, Esau and Jacob. In fact, they're twins. Esau was not part of the covenant. Jacob was. He was chosen. Because he's the son? Well, Esau's also a son, but he was not chosen. But all 12 of these sons are chosen in the Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob covenant, all 12. And Joseph is in Egypt, ruling Egypt under Pharaoh. I forgot all of the suffering I've gone through. I'm in a good place. I've got a wife. My first son, Manasseh, I forgot about my suffering. And I forgot about that whole Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the whole household. I'm not looking back. Because one of the things you're going to see, and I'll mention in the notes if I don't, if I remember, but during the 7 years, He's got chariots. He's running the whole land. He's got communication. I mean, he's not running around to every city. He maybe checked them all, but he's got information and servants, messengers going throughout the land. I mean, if he's organized, he's getting notes, records that he's compiling, giving to Pharaoh. So you know what he could have done with one guy? He could have said, you know what? I want you to make a run up into the land of Canaan. There's a place there on the trade route, and go to a place called, and gave him directions to the last location where Jacob was, and tell my dad. And here, he says, I'm going to write a note, and it's an information or details, and when my dad sees this, he'll realize I'm still alive. He's going to have 7 years during this right here, and you would think that after being taken captive and in prison, and now nothing's restraining him. It's like, you can be in charge of the whole land of Egypt, but do not contact your family. You know, it's like, there's no rule. He could do whatever he wanted to. He got the signet ring. He's got the auto pen. Boom. But Joseph makes no effort. In fact, he names his first son. Why make an effort? I'm not even thinking about him. I forgot about that whole mess, not just my brothers, not just the suffering, but the whole inheritance, the whole family concept of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I'm out. I've got my own family here in Egypt. It's like, well, do you really think that's what he meant? Well, if he didn't really mean that, do you think he would have made some attempt to go see Jacob? there's some attempt to say, Dad, I'm still alive? Because back in Canaan, who's still mourning? Who's still upset that he's lost his favorite son? I mean, he's still living under the shadow that I'm afraid I'm going to lose Benjamin too. So there's still people grieving for Joseph back in Canaan. But Jacob's like, yeah, I'm moving on. Anyway, that's interesting. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, you got to decide, am I adding into the scriptures? I mean, but I forgot all about my suffering. I forgot about my entire family's household. And then 7 years, it's going to be 9 years from now, in the second year of the famine, that his brothers are going to show up. And then he doesn't say, brothers! He's going to go into, he just plays the role. Actually, he's going to use an interpreter to talk to him. What are these barbarians saying? It's like, huh. And he's going to call him spy. Well, let's hurry and get there. Let's hurry and get there. All right, it's kind of fun. I mean, obviously, this is a fun story, I think. But he named him Manasseh. So you can kind of get an insight into what he's thinking there, possibly. Chapter 41, 52, page 4, the name of the second son he called Ephraim. Again, a Hebrew word, Hebrew name. For God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. I forgot the affliction. I'm in a good place. I forgot my family's household. And now, again, God is in the name. God has made me fruitful in the land that was afflicting me. Look, I'm prospering. I've prospered in my life, my career. I've prospered financially. I've prospered in my family. So Ephraim means I have prospered in the land of my affliction. And notice I put down there point 1A11, 1AI1, whatever. Notice concerning God, Joseph is still conscious of God. He still credits God, and he still considers God good. I mean, it's not like he's not bitter towards God. He's just living life, living it faith. Listen, he was faithful to God in Potiphar's house. He was faithful to God in prison. He was faithful to God when he was interpreting Pharaoh's dreams. And now he's living in luxury, in prosperity, in power, honoring God. And names his children about God. But I'm not dragging the past into this. And I'm not feeling bad about the past. God has dealt with that, dealt with me, and I'm in a good place. Point two, Joseph does not give his sons Egyptian names. That's interesting. And then point three is kind of where he says that there's no record of any attempt for him to go back to the land. Joseph knows where Jacob lives. Joseph is not that far away. And Joseph could have made contact, at least sent a messenger, but Joseph does none of that. Chapter 41, 53. The 7 years of plenty that occurred in the land of Egypt came to an end. Okay, so now we're down here. Now he's 37 with two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And of course, you're going to want to remember those names, and you do, because they're going to end up being tribes of Israel. They're each going to get land when Moses goes in and Joshua, they divide the land up. So Joseph gets no land, but Joseph gets, in a sense, the double portion. Judah's going to get some land, Benjamin's going to get some land, but Joseph's going to get none because his share goes to Ephraim and Manasseh. Joseph is going to get, and that's a fulfillment of those dreams he had where he sees his brothers, they're all gathering sheaves, and that's going to come up here later, and they all come and bow down to his sheaf, the brothers do. But then he has another dream where the sun, the moon, the stars all come and bow down to him, which indicates mom and dad, even Jacob realized that's what it means, but it's the whole family is going to come and recognize Joseph. And part of that is going to be manifest in the fact that he gets a double portion from Ephraim and Manasseh. Okay, chapter 41, 53, the 7 years of plenty that occurred in the land of Egypt came to an end. Chapter 41, verse 54, and the 7 years of famine began to come as Joseph had said. There was famine in, now I've got the word underlined there, in all lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. So everyone is suffering the famine, but because of Joseph storing the abundance, there's still food in the land of Egypt. And I want you to notice right there, I don't want to erase that, but it's not that big of a deal. I guess I was interested in this, and I'm more interested in just writing Hebrew letters on the board, you know, to show off a little bit. Tyler can do it better. But there's the word all. This is the word call right here. K-A-L in Hebrew, and it means all. Now, in these next verses, the word all is used. It's used once in chapter 41, verse 48, twice in chapter 41, 51, and eight times in chapter 41, 54 through 57. And I've got it underlined in the English text. But here I've got it in that where it's got the Hebrew translation there in interlinear. I've got the word ben all or bet all. And you can see right there, it's going to have a be in front of it right here. That is right here. This is be, which means in. And then this is the word call, which means all. So you can see I've got there in a box that word be, kel. And even above it, you can see it's, right above the underline, it's bet kel. And then the translation below it is be in all. So right there, just so you can see that, in all. And then if you flip the page, and I've got it in chapter 41, 54, you can see in all, it's underlined in the English, in all lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. Now turn the page, page 5, and I'm going to read 55, 56, 57. I've got it underlined all, and that's where not necessarily Bethel, but Kel, or all, pops up. It's repeated over and over again. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. This is the beginning of the famine. Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, what does he say? Oh, I've got an answer. I campaigned on this. I will provide for you. He answers, go to Joseph. And then what he says to you, do. Go to Joseph, what he says, you do. Gave him two commands. Go to Joseph, do what he says. Now Joseph is going, he's running. He's not running the country. He's running the agriculture and the food system. I mean, he's probably got other privileges also. But, he's not Pharaoh, but he is solving this famine problem. And notice the word all. And again, that's where you can see where in your mind, Pharaoh should have said, go to Zephanath-Paneah. But he doesn't. He says, Joseph. Does that mean he started calling him Joseph? Or does that mean when Moses wrote this, he doesn't use his Egyptian name? He just, we already know what he was called, but we know him as Joseph. So that could go either way. Chapter 41, 56. So when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened all the storehouses, and sold to the Egyptians. Notice, and sold to the Egyptians. And sold, didn't give them SNAP cards, didn't give them free food, didn't give them a welfare check. What do you got? He sold it to them. And when I don't know if this was part of the plan or if Pharaoh knew what he was getting into, but where this is going to end up, they're going to spend all their money on food that Joseph's selling to them. And then when they run out of that, they're going to start selling their land for food. Okay. And then when they're done, they're going to start selling themselves as servants of the state. They're all going to be state employees living on state-owned land, eating state-provided food. So by the time the 7 years is done, Joseph says, I think my work is done here. Pharaoh says, I want everything. Yep, even the people. Now again, as an American, as a supporter of the Constitution, of no kings.
Well, look, see, I voted
today. But it's just interesting what Joseph does. I mean, he just turns old. But we'll see it develop. So when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Moreover, all the earth came to Egypt to Joseph to buy grain, because the famine was severe over all the earth. Now again, all the earth, that's a similar phrase to the flood covered all the earth. Now, I do think the flood covered the entire globe. I think that's indicated. This right here, I think, probably has to be put in context. I mean, I have no way of checking if the entire globe was out of food. And if it was, well, entire nations and civilizations starve because the only food is in Egypt. Jacob can get to Egypt, Western Africa can get to Egypt, the Babylonians or Sumerians, they can get to Egypt, but it's going to be hard to get to Egypt if you're from London or if you're from North America or from Australia. So I'm not going to push that, all the earth. But it is interesting, you do have that parallel, just like Noah's flood affected the entire earth and they were saved by Noah's ark, his family was. Joseph's going to save because of what he was putting together. Now, what you've got there in the notes, and we've seen it before, that is the middle kingdom of what we're talking about right in here. And it's the dynasty, the 11th dynasty and the 12th dynasty. And we are in the 12th dynasty. Again, this means nothing to you until you sit down and look at Egyptian history. It means nothing to me except I did the research and put it together. But right here, Jacob would be born during the 11th dynasty in 2006 BC. Abraham dies during Menhuhatap. Where's Abraham dying? Menhuhatap. I shouldn't have done this. Right here. Do I have a picture? Oh, yeah, right here. There he is. Abraham dies during this Pharaoh's reign right there. That would have been the Pharaoh when Abraham died, if my numbers are correct. Dynasty 12 begins. And you can see who's in charge. Amenhet the second, Joseph is sold into Egypt, and that's this guy, Amenhotep, there, right here. Joseph is sold into Egypt while this guy's on the throne. There's his statue and there's his sphinx. But anyway, that's that information there that's kind of interesting. That's where I've come down at the dates. The next page, 6, bunch of details that we have about what was going on during each of those pharaoh's reigns. And that bottom one, bottom page 6, Senwosret the second, there's 15 points about this person's reign and what took place during his reign that parallel with the Joseph story that would allow it to fit and make sense. We do not have any kind of an inscription that says that like we do in Babylon with Nebuchadnezzar or Cyrus or other situations, even the Assyrians with a Jehu. Chapter 42 verse 1. Now that's what's going on up in Egypt. They've had their 7 years of plenty. They've got their 7 years of famine that has started. People are selling, or buying the food. Joseph's running it. Everything's rocking and rolling in Egypt. But the other countries are going to start running out of food because they didn't have the insight that Yahweh gave Pharaoh. Now, do you understand why Egypt is in this position? Not because Joseph's smart, not because Joseph's a good manager, both those are true, but without this revelation from God given to Pharaoh, Joseph would just be going about his day just like Jacob and Reuben and Simeon, and all of a sudden one time it just, crops stop growing, and it's going to be 7 years before they grow again. So, meanwhile in Egypt, Pharaoh's still on the throne, Joseph's still riding around his chariot, his little boys are growing up, he's still feeding the people. The people are happy. They're glad Joseph's who he is. They're happy Pharaoh's in charge. But all the other countries are like, we didn't know this was going to happen. The insight was right there. Interesting, again, Pharaoh, an Egyptian, who possibly was not even native to the other dynasties because it was a new dynasty came in, a new group of people. Yahweh is giving him divine revelation on how to save the covenant people who are left in the outside back in the land of Canaan knowing, we don't know what's going on. We're out of food. And so, when Jacob learned that there was grain for sale in Egypt, he said to his sons, and here's the translation, the English Standard Version, depends on what you've got in your Bibles. He says, why do you look at one another? Now, a couple things here. Jacob learned that there was grain for sale. How did he learn? Probably not watching the mainstream media, he's probably getting information from the caravans, the traders going back and forth, or this large amount of people traveling down to Egypt and getting in the food lines. And they're out of food too, and it's like, wow. Well, so they're all hungry, and again, this is the first or second year of the famine. And I've got, it's fun to read commentators and have them explain this, and they say the same thing. But the phrase right there, he says to his sons, why do you look at one another? And that word is, did I not put it in a box? Oh, yeah, it's the last phrase in Hebrew. It's on the left side. You got to read that backwards. And you see the transliteration of the Hebrew words, or the literal translation. And when saw Jacob that there was grain in Egypt, then said Jacob to his sons, why do you look at one another? And you see that word, look at one another. Right above it, it's T-I-T, tight. Then ra, or ra'ah. And then you, that word, the best they can do is that ra'ah in the middle. I've got that right in the middle, right below it. R-A comes from the Hebrew ra'ah, R-A-A-H, which means to see, to view, or to appear. To see, to view, to appear. It has to do with looking. That word is used, point one, ra'ah means see, show self, sight of others, stare, surely, think, view. The shorter R-A-A is translated in battle scenes, for example, in 2 Kings 8:11, of this army coming out in their battle formation and forming a battle line, and this formation coming out and forming a battle. Now, that's not the base meaning. The base meaning of the word means to see, to view, to look at. But it also is used of what, give me an example of look at, it would be like, well, they're look to look at each other would be this military marches out. Like, here's the Philistines, and here comes Saul's army, and they march out and look at each other, form battle lines. Then Goliath comes and says, you know, send me your champion and let us fight, and if you beat me, we'll be your slaves, if, you know, however. And they got the, and then they go back to their camps. It's used that way in military. That's not the only meaning. So it appears that his sons are, if you push it, they're like, they realize they've got a problem. They form their lines. It's like, we have a problem. And then they just stare at each other. We don't have any food. We don't have any food. And Jacob's like, he's getting to be an old man, and he's hoping these guys are, well, they're, and I've got it coming up in the notes. Reuben is going to be, if we take Joseph's age, which we're pretty sure of, and then we estimate everybody else's age, Reuben is going to be 49, 50 years old. So that's how old Reuben is. And then you can kind of go down. And then the youngest, Benjamin, if Joseph is 39, Benjamin is younger than that, but he's not, you know, you read your Bible story, your Sunday school story, he's like a, you know, a 10-year-old boy. But the thing is, Joseph knew Benjamin, you know, 22 years ago before he was sold into captivity. So Benjamin is at least, you know, 22 years old. And so he's probably more like, you know, 30 years old or something. I've got the numbers, I kind of make an estimate. So, but nonetheless, if Joseph is 39, let's say 40, all the brothers are between 40 and 50 years old, and they're, and well, Jacob's upset. Jacob learned that there was grain for sale in Egypt, and he said to his sons, why do you look at each other? You've talked to the same caravans I've talked to. There's grain in Egypt. Everybody else is getting grain. Why are you just looking at each other? Why are you just standing here? So you can see he's kind of upset. Again, unless I read too much into that. And he said, behold, I have heard that there is grain for sale in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there that we may live and not die. They're in a position where if they don't go to Egypt and buy this grain, we're going to die. So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. And you know, there's 12 sons. Joseph's there in Egypt. Benjamin, the youngest son, who's, you know, probably about 30 years old, is going to stay back with his father. So 10 of them go. But Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, with his brothers, for he feared that harm might happen to him. That harm would be some kind of, you know, danger or damage to his body or even death. Thus the sons of Israel came to buy among the others who came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. So there's food lines now, but you don't just go necessarily and pick up free food. You've got to buy this. And for some reason, Joseph is, how many people is he, how many of the buyers from Canaan and from West Africa and Mesopotamia and South Africa that's coming up to buy from Egypt, how many of these people does Joseph actually meet face to face? Because he is sitting in a place of permission and probably signing documents or, you know, sealing, you can have this much grain, and making contracts and selling the grain. His brothers don't, it's just like one day his brothers end up at Joseph's house. I mean, Joseph in some place of seeing masses of people coming, migrating in and migrating out with the food. So they go. So 10 of the brothers went to buy grain, but Jacob did not send Benjamin. Chapter 42, 5. Thus the sons of Israel came to buy among the others who came. So there's many there, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. And that means also in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people of the land. So he's still selling grain. This is probably, again, it's not so long in the end of the famine that they're dead, but it can't just be the first week of the famine or the first week of the 7 years, because surely you've got something left over from last year. I mean, if we don't get groceries this week, there's something in the refrigerator. I may not want it, but I can eat that. But then after about, 2 days, I'm not going to eat it. It's famine time. Well, that's in my house. But in these days, they had probably had stuff they could eat until into the second year. Again, you could do some more figuring on that. But so this is now the second year of the famine, and he's still selling stuff to the people. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them. Now, once again, remember how long it has been. It has been some, well, we go back to, I wish I would have hadn't erased this right here. He was 17 when he left. Okay, there we go. And he's 13 years in prison, so he's 30 when he comes out. Now you've got 7 years of famine, or plenty, so now he's 37. And now we've got probably the second year, and now he's 39. So 13 plus 7 is 20, plus the 2 is, he's been gone for 22 years. Last time he's seen his brothers was 22 years ago. And remember, if he is 39, and he's one of the young, Benjamin's younger than him, but otherwise Joseph is the youngest, he's brother number 11. So that means the 10 brothers that are older than him are, we'll just say, 40, and then you can figure out Reuben is about 50. And so they're 40 to 50 years old, and the last time he saw them was 22 years before when they were 18 to 28. And he recognized them. They didn't say anything. He has no story. They just walk in. And these are Canaanites, in Joseph's eyes, or any Canaanites coming from Canaan. And so they're not just a special group of Canaanites. They're just more Canaanites coming in, more Canaanites coming in. And he recognizes them. Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he treated them like strangers and spoke roughly to them. "Where do you come from?" he said. And they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." And Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. And Joseph remembered the dreams that he dreamed of them. And he said to them, "You are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of this land." So Jacob is going to be using an interpreter. Somewhere it says this in here. Did I miss that? Now Joseph was governor of the land. He was one who sold people. So his brothers came to him themselves and face to the ground. Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he treated them like strangers and spoke roughly to them. "Where do you come from?" Now they say, "We've come from Canaan to buy," and that's what everybody's saying. There's lines of people. "We're from Canaan. We're here to buy food." And they say, "Okay, what do you have? This is how much it is." And they make the deal, sign the contract, use the ring or whatever, and they go out to the granary and get grain. But instead, he recognizes them, and so he talks rough with them, and they don't know who he is. Obviously, he's 22 years older. He's 39. The last time they saw him was he was 17. Now he's 40. He's shaved, most likely. He looks like an Egyptian, talks like an Egyptian. And somewhere in here, he's using an interpreter to talk. It says, I haven't seen it here, but he's not. He can understand them, but they don't think he can. It's like Ohtani, is that his name? The baseball player, Ohtani, the Japanese player. And they said that after the game the other night, they're interviewing him, and he's got his interpreter talking. He only talks to the media through an interpreter, But they said that while he's during the last interview, they're having the closing comments where the commentator is talking to his interpreter. Otani's going like this, and the mics were still on. And he goes, he shakes it. He goes, "Yeah, you know, thanks, yeah, we'll do it again. We'll see you again." And he's perfect English saying goodbye to him. And it's like, and then the guys that I was listening to, they go, "Oh, we just found the Stevie Wonder of language." You know, it's like, you know, the one time, you remember Stevie Wonder with the glasses, you know, you can't see, but the microphone tipped over and he caught it and stood it back up on the, did you ever see that? That there's a video, he's performing and the microphone gets kicked over and he's singing, catches the microphone, stands back, and like, whoa, that's some instincts. But nonetheless, Joseph's playing the same thing. He's playing the Ohtani card here. It's like he's using an interpreter, so everything they say, they don't know. So what he's talking rough to him, and so now the interpreter's gonna say, when they say we've come from the land, from Canaan, to buy food, then Joseph, 42 verse 9, Joseph remembered his dreams that he had dreamed about them, and he said to them, "You are spies, and you have come to see the nakedness of the land." You're just using this as a chance to come in and find our weakness. The nakedness of the land means, where are we exposed? Is it in our military? Is it in our border? Is it in our government? Is it in our economy? You're here to analyze everything you can see, and he's giving all kinds of credit. You're just trying to find the weakness in our system here. And of course, listen, it says he remembered his dream, and then he started calling them spies. So he knows he's got them, and the two dreams are, as you know, we reviewed it, the brothers are to come and their sheaves are to bow down to his sheaf. Now they're in that position right now, but he can count. There's only 10 of them there. There's one more. And the vision is, the dream was, all of them come. And then he's also got the dream that his father and his mother's, the entire household comes and bows down to him. So I'm not sure if that's motivating him on this. Because, I mean, is he bitter? Is he vengeful? It seems like the name Manasseh means, I've moved on. I mean, I'm blessed in this land. That's all ancient history. I've even forgot about it. Now they walk in. Now there's going to be emotion stirred. Is he? And you got to ask, you as you read through this, is he being vindictive? Is he trying to let, this is what it feels like, and he's trying to pay him back? Or is he using his dreams? Again, I'm not saying this is the right answer. Is he using his dreams? Like Pharaoh had a dream. Okay, we're going to use that dream as a model of how we're going to perform. Now he's got a dream, and all 11 of his brothers come and bow down. There's only 10 here. I need to get the 10th one here. I got to get the 11th brother here. And so he's going to create to get that brother here so the dream is complete. And then it's like, oh, I need the whole family here to complete the next dream. Are those dreams, just like Pharaoh's dreams guided him through the years of famine or plenty and famine, is he now going to use his dreams to reunite the family? He's given up on the Abrahamic covenant. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I forgot that. I moved on. Oh, here they are. Oh, they're supposed to bow down to me. We need all 11 of them. Ugh. And he takes it seriously. God gave him this dream, and he told his brothers about it. You got to go get Benjamin. Okay? Now I need your dad. I need everybody here. And now they're all bowing down, and now the Abrahamic covenant is back on track. I mean, it's all. So there's something taking place right here. He remembered his dreams. And so he said to them, "You are spies." He remembered his dream, says, "Oh, can I give you some food? How's dad?" No. He's followed. Somehow, remembering his dreams, because, and it's easy to say, now he's just going to be vengeful. It's like, I spent 13 years in prison. I was sold. You were trying to kill me if it wasn't Reuben. Reuben's the one that got him in the pit, so they didn't kill him. Judah's the one who says, let's sell him. What good is he if he's dead? So Judah's doing a money deal. So something's taking place right here. Okay, point A, Joseph's dreams, the brothers, okay, I think we referred to that, I reset all that. Then Jacob accused them of spying in Egypt, searching for their weakness. chapter 42, verse 10, they said to him, no, now you can imagine these 10 guys. They've come all the way to Egypt to get food, to save their, they've got families, they've got wives, they've got sons, they've got grandkids, they've got a father. And now it's like, no, you're spies. And they say, no, my Lord, your servants have come to buy food. No, we're like everybody else. Why did you not think those guys were spies? There's nobody being arrested here. Why do you think we look just like everybody else? No, I've got insight. I can tell you're spies. Now watch, here's what they say, chapter 42, verse 7. It's very interesting to hear them talk after 22 years. We are all sons of one man. No, we're all brothers. We are honest men. Okay, now again, that's their, no, we're honest men. We've got money, we're going to buy our food. And now that's probably talking about in this scenario. No, we're honest men. We've got money, we'll give you money for the food. We're not going to rip anybody off, we're not here to steal anything. We're honest men, well, in this moment. Because you can go back and read already some of the stories. They're not honest men, and Joseph knows himself. I know you're not honest. You lied to my father about the coat, or they had to come up with some kind of a story. No, we are honest men. Your servants have never been spies. We've never even been trained. Do we look like we've got spy skills? Yeah, I'm suspicious. Now, he's saying that in Egyptian, and then the other guys translate it into Hebrew for these brothers, and they have no idea who they're dealing with. They're just dealing with this powerful Egyptian. He's probably got a pyramid built somewhere. He said to them, no, it is the nakedness of the land that you have come to see. And they says, we are your servants. Or excuse me, we your servants. Now watch this. Great verse. Our 12 brothers. There's 12 of us. The sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is no more. So they still identify themselves as 12. We've left one with our father, and we sold the other one. Well, he is no more. He's probably dead. We sold him 22 years ago. What's the chance of him surviving slavery for 22 years? But nonetheless, let's not get into the details. Let's go back to the point. We're honest men. But Joseph said to them, it is as I said to you. You are spies. That's the third time. That's his final news. I've looked at you. I've heard you talk. I've got skills. Yeah, you're spies. By this you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you and again, why does he want the youngest one? Because he needs all 11 she's bowing down. I don't know. That's not what it says, but he is saying he's following his dream. Or it says he remembered his dream. Send one of you and let him bring your brother while you remain confined, that your words may be tested, whether there is truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies. So now how's that going to work? All they got to do is go back to camp. They don't have to go all the way back to camp. They just got to go back to camp, grab some kid or some other guy. Hey, be our brother. You just say your name's Benjamin. Come here. Here's our 12th brother. Here's our 11th brother. How's he going to know who their brother is? They got identification cards? And maybe they do. And he put them all together in custody for 3 days. So now he puts them in prison. And they're locked up for 3 days. They got 3 days to think about, oh my gosh, we're never going to get out of here. We're spies in a foreign land under a powerful leader. No one knows we're here. Benjamin's not going to come rescue us. It's over. And then after being left in prison, and he put them all together in custody for 3 days. On the third day, Joseph said to them, do this and you will live, for I fear God. I was thinking, I'm a man that honors God, and God's been dealing with I want to do what's right. And maybe I've mis-evaluated. But we'll do this, because I fear God, and again, he's using the word Elohim. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers remain confined here in prison where you are in custody, and let the rest go and carry grain for the famine of your household. I care about your family. You're here. If you really aren't spies and you really got families back there, you need to get food back to them. Dad needs food, is what he's saying. Dad's got to have some food. But we're going to keep one of you in prison. and bringing your youngest brother to me, so you, okay, rest go and for your households, and bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified, and you shall not die. That's the option. And they did so. Then they said to one another, okay, we gotta, this is getting too good. But what he's gonna do, he's gonna choose Simeon to stay in prison. And it's interesting on why did he choose Simeon. If he's going to choose someone that betrayed him, it would be Judah who decided to sell him. Reuben, the oldest, was the one who got them to not to kill him and put him in a pit so he could rescue him later. So Reuben would be in the plus column. Judah would be in the negative column. So you could see maybe why he would take and try to get to Judah. But instead, he goes with, right here, Reuben was the one who wanted to save him out of the pit. Judah's the one who says, instead of selling him, leaving him in the pit, let's sell him. Simeon did nothing. But Simeon's the one that's going to be chosen, and no one knows for sure why Simeon was chosen. It's good that Reuben's not chosen. It would be good that if Judah was chosen, pay him back. But Simeon is chosen. The best that I can come up with, and I thought about it a little bit, these are Leah's sons, 1, 2, 3, 4. And then Rachel's got two sons, Joseph 1, Benjamin 2. So he's keeping Leah's second son until he sees Rachel's second son. Now that's a connection. That's not absolute. But is that supposed to be some kind of code for dad to see? Because he's just going to say, I want you. And so me into prison until these guys come back. And they're not. They're planning. They're never going to come back to talk to this guy again. He thinks we're spies. They'll leave Simeon in prison just like they left Joseph in a cistern. We're not here to save anybody except ourselves. So Simeon is chosen. And now when they get home, Jacob was going, well, where's Simeon? Where's Leah's second son? We won't see Leah's second son until you send, he said, Rachel's second son. Now, it's his youngest son, but it's Rachel's second son, and Leah's second son is now in prison. And so if that's some kind of a connect, it makes sense in because these are Jacob's sons through Leah. Joseph and Benjamin are Jacob's sons through Rachel. And now he's got to risk Rachel's second son for Leah's second son, the one he loved for the one he despised. And so is he playing a game? Otherwise, there's no... Reuben's involved in saving him from the death. Judah's involved in selling him out of the pit. Levi's not involved. But all of a sudden, Simeon pops up. Again, that's something to think about, research. And maybe it's just random. Jewish tradition says that there is animosity between Simeon and Joseph going way back to when he was 17. And this is legend, tradition, that Simeon was the one who, when they saw him at a distance, says, let's kill him. Let's get rid of him. It was Simeon's idea, they say. Now, there's no Bible for that. The only clue you've got is he chooses Simeon. I mean, he could have chose anybody, but Simeon's been. So that's, I don't know why Simeon is going to be chosen. But we got to pick this up next week and continue. What a great story. I mean, even hearing it, talking to it, it's like it's a Sunday school story. It's a 10-minute cartoon video. Or it's a 3-week Bible lesson that you're going to have to endure. So I'll pray and we're free to go. I appreciate you being here. Father, I do thank you for the chance to listen to your word, to hear your word. We do ask that we would, like Joseph, that we would consider you, that you are leading us, guiding us, delivering us from our past, taking us into a land of goodness that you've got planned for us. And we just ask that we would be like Joseph and others of the Bible, that we would consider your plans and seek to fulfill your desires for our lives and what you have planned for the church in this age. We do again thank you for this opportunity to hear your word and ask that we would be living examples that your spirit is alive in us and that your word has transformed us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for being here.